In the summer of 2020, it seemed like every Catholic bishop wanted to comment and support the Black Lives Matter protest. However, now there are protests going on in Canada, the Freedom Convoy, but the bishops are almost completely silent about it. Why is that? Is the Freedom Convoy against Catholic social teaching? We'll talk about that today on Crisis Point. I am Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. So first, I want to review what's going on with this Freedom Convoy, what it is, what's going on, what's the status right now. And then I want to talk specifically about the Catholic reaction to it. Should Catholics support it? Why aren't the bishops coming out in support about it? Why are they completely silent about it? Is it possibly contrary to Catholic social teaching? I want to talk about those things. So let's first just dive in and talk about what's going on. So on January 22nd, Canadian truckers began to drive in a convoy towards Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada. I'm not a Canadian expert, so hopefully I won't get any of these details wrong about Canada itself. But they start coming from all over the country, and their plan was to converge on Ottawa, which they did on January 29th. And initially, the reason they started this was simply because they were protesting the fact that there was a vaccine mandate to cross the border between the United States and Canada, both instituted by Canada and also instituted by the United States. And so they thought that was wrong, and so that's what they're protesting. However, as it grew, as the convoy grew, it really became a movement against all the COVID-related mandates and restrictions. So, and they basically said, we're going to converge on Ottawa, and we're just going to stay there until all these mandates have been dropped, that there'd be no more COVID mandates at all, no vax mandates, no mask mandates, anything. Some were even calling for the ouster of the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau. So they got there, like I said, on January 29th. But then this wasn't the only thing that was happening. So that began to grow, and there started to be things going on in Ottawa that they were just basically staying there outside the parliament buildings. And you can see live streams of this, lots of different streams of this on YouTube. I'm surprised they haven't shut them down. But then what happened was other protests started happening. The biggest one was at the Ambassador Bridge, which is the bridge that links Detroit and Windsor. And it's the number one bridge for commerce going between the two countries of the United States and Canada. 30% of all goods, in fact, that travel between the two countries travel over this bridge. Well, protesters blocked it. They basically made it impossible to cross the bridge. And they had it blocked for essentially a week. Although this past Sunday on the 13th of February, the police did come in and they did remove the blockade and arrested anybody who stayed there. Now, one thing that's interesting is that many of the protesters that are involved in the Freedom Convoy are explicitly Christian, and they're stating their faith is one of the reasons why they're doing this, that they believe in a certain basically fighting against totalitarianism, being told what to do. Some of them are opposing the vaccine on moral grounds. So a lot of this is a Christian thing, and it was interesting because when they first converged on Ottawa, it was just the typical leftist playbook to just say, oh, they're racist, they're misogynists, they were against transgenderism, something, all that stupid stuff, which had nothing to do with the protests at all. They're very clear. Get rid of the mandates and we'll go home. Keep the mandates and we'll stay here. It was that simple. There really was nothing else to it. My friend Kennedy Hall, who writes for Crisis Magazine, I saw he did an interview for LifeSite News with a guy who I believe was Muslim and vaccinated trucker who was involved in this. So kind of hard to be calling them racist or anything like that, and just anti-vax when really this guy was vaccinated, but he was against vaccine mandates. So it really was a diverse group of people who were converging on Ottawa. Now, fortunately, as of today, the 15th of February, we've already seen success. There have been a number of provinces in Canada that have dropped their vaccine mandates or announced they're going to, and which has been great. This has been great to see. Now, of course, they all kind of act like it had nothing to do with these protests, which we all know are lies. The fact is that they feel the pressure. They realize, oh, this isn't necessarily polling so well. Because this is interesting. Last fall, in Canada, polling numbers showed that most Canadians were supportive of these measures. In fact, when Justin Trudeau was running, there was an election, I think it was September. I think it was a recall or something like that. But he basically demonized the unvaccinated and said, they're the real problem in our society. That's who we have to take care of. And this worked and people were supportive of it. But since then, polls have shown in Canada that people are very much against the the mandates now are supportive of these protests. And also another great thing is these protests are spreading. They're going to other countries. France has had them. I think I saw New Zealand. Australia has had some things. There's a plan for a trucker convoy starting in early March in the United States, going from California all the way to Washington, D.C. So this idea is spreading because people are realizing this actually might work. Because if one thing people need to realize is that our modern economy is very dependent upon truckers. Without truckers, we're all screwed. I think I saw where 80% of all of our goods that arrive in our stores come by truck. 80% of the things you get in your house came by truck. I mean, during the lockdowns, I should say, people were getting all their stuff delivered to their house. Well, how did it get to your house? How does the groceries get to the grocery store? How does everything get to Walmart? How do these things arrive there? They arrive there by truck primarily. And so when the truckers start to say, no, we're not going to do this anymore, politicians have to listen because the whole system shuts down without truckers. And so I think other countries are starting to realize this. Now, interestingly, just yesterday, Justin Trudeau announced that he was invoking the Emergency Act to crush the protest. I'm going to play a little bit of this video here of him announcing this.
After discussing with cabinet and caucus, after consultation with premiers from all provinces and territories.
Okay, I just have to pause that for a second. How did this guy ever get elected? I'm sorry, but this guy, I mean, I just watch him and he's the most uninspiring person other than Joe Biden, I think, in the world. I mean, anyway, let's go.
Territories. After speaking with opposition leaders, the federal government has invoked the Emergencies Act to supplement provincial and territorial capacity to address the blockades and occupations.
Note he said the blockades and occupations. He obviously can't say protests because protests is what Black Lives Matter does. That's what peaceful protests or things like that he can't say this is about protests. It's about blockades and occupation. Now, blockades, okay, I can understand. We'll talk about this a little bit in a little bit. The difference between a blockade and certainly a protest, but occupation, basically that's just the demonized word for a protest. They're outside of parliament and they're not leaving. So he calls that an occupation. But note, they haven't actually gone in the buildings. So they're trying to make this a January 6th thing, but they haven't gone in any buildings.
I want to be very clear. The scope of these measures will be time limited, geographically targeted, as well as reasonable and proportionate.
Okay, let's be honest. Anytime government implements anything, it's never time limited, other than just as long as we feel like doing it. I mean, look at, 2 weeks, 15 days to stop the spread. That was time limited. We were only supposed to be locked down for 15 days. It happened to be for months. We're only supposed to have these things for a few weeks, and it's been 2 years now, and we're still dealing with them. And by the way, just for American listeners here, Canada's been much worse on this. Now, there's been states in America that have been terrible, like California, New York, and some others. But overall, Canada on the federal level has been terrible on this, much worse than the United States has been. But the idea that any of these new laws are time limited is, I think we all know that that's just a joke. Let's keep going.
To the threats they are meant to address. The Emergencies Act will be used to strengthen and support law enforcement agencies at all levels across the country. This is about keeping Canadians safe, protecting people's jobs, and restoring confidence in our institutions.
Okay, our institutions have despised us for 2 years. They've hated us. They've shut us down. They've made us lose our jobs. And this is and doing more of that is supposed to give us more confidence in our institutions. I think it's interesting, like protect our jobs. You're literally one of the main reasons people have lost their jobs is because you're telling them they have to get vaccinated in order to keep their jobs. You shut down small businesses. You've done all these terrible things. I mean, Trudeau's not the only one. A lot of them have. And yet this is supposed to be for protecting your jobs and for safety. Okay, I'm not going to keep going on because, boy, that guy is just hard to watch, isn't he? But what's interesting also is this is even more a little bit more disturbing. Was one of the things they decided to do was they're shutting down donations. I think people might know that first the trucker set up a GoFundMe, which was a mistake from the beginning. Why would you trust GoFundMe? And sure enough, after they had raised $10 million, they GoFundMe shut it down. Then they went to GiveSendGo, which was supportive of them, and they've raised a lot of money. But now an Ontario court is saying, no, you can't actually, we're going to freeze those assets. You can't do that. Now, GiveSendGo is fighting back. God bless them. They're based in, I think, Massachusetts. They're like, Canada can't tell us what to do. But the fact is like, listen to this, what they're now saying.
We are broadening the scope of Canada's anti-money laundering and terrorist financing rules so that they cover crowdfunding platforms and the payment service providers they use. These changes cover all forms of transactions, including digital assets, such as cryptocurrencies.
So basically what they're saying is you are not going to be allowed to give money to these people no matter what you try. Now, they include cryptocurrencies because it's pretty well known that's the one thing they can't control. So the fact is that you can still give Bitcoin to these truckers. I gave Bitcoin to these truckers just the other day. You can still donate Bitcoin to them and they're going to get it. Now, they can do things to try to keep them from actually using that in different places. Like, for example, if you have Bitcoin and you go to a store, you can't. Most stores won't accept Bitcoin. So you have to cash it in for Canadian dollars or whatever first. And that's going to be where your point of problem is going to be. That's, by the way, that's why we need alternative economies so people can spend Bitcoin, send Bitcoin, use Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies all the time, and the government can't control it. This is really troubling, though, because what they're basically saying is if you are a political dissident, we will make it so you can't live. You can't eat. You can't use money. If you can't use money, you die. I mean, there's no other option. And remember, this is for political dissent. This is not for actual criminals. Yes, I realize they're declaring them criminals. This is not for people who've done anything violent. This is not for people who have in any way broken any reasonable law. What's happened is that they've just had to create new laws to say that now you're breaking them for political protest. So political protesters, people who dissent, are now being told you're not going to have any money. You're not going to be able to spend money. And this is what a lot of people have been warning about for years now, the idea of a cashless society, that you can't spend money unless you agree with what the people in charge have to tell you. So it really is pretty troubling to listen to this and hear this. So this is a very dystopian thing going on here. Now, fortunately, there is resistance even to this. Even after the Emergency Act was announced yesterday, there have been new protests on the borders with Canada and America, like in North Dakota, Montana. I apologize, I'm using the American side of it. I'm more familiar with that. But those have been blocked now, and I think they're blocked as of this moment. So fortunately, they are fighting back. And the truth is, you know, protests, they need to make you uncomfortable. This is what the Black Lives Matter supporters were saying a couple of years ago when they started having these riots. Basically, they say, well, it's got to hurt a little bit for people to listen. Well, nobody's rioting in this case. Nobody's doing violence, but they are doing things like they're shutting down the systems. They're basically going on strike in one sense, the truckers are. So this is a really big deal. And I think this is something that as Catholics, we really need to look at this and say, okay, how does this match with Catholic social teaching and how can we support this? Should we support this? This is really the first, there's been a lot of resistance to the COVID restrictions, the totalitarianism that's been growing over the past few years, but this is really when it's coming together. And can I just say, isn't it amazing that it's Canada? And this is not meant as an insult at all to our Canadian friends. I mean, God bless them. They're awesome. But nobody, I think, would have predicted that Canada would be where resistance would really start. I mean, I think most people would guess the United States of America, but let's be honest, we're not doing it. But Canada, our nice neighbors to and polite neighbors to the north, God bless you, you're doing it. Now, what have the bishops been saying? Now, remember during Black Lives Matter summer, they wouldn't shut up about what's going on. They talked a lot about the need for all this healing and how there's racism, systemic racism we have to address. And they never really condemned anything going on in the Black Lives Matter protests, even when it got to violence. Well, what have they said about the Freedom Convoy? Well, the fact is they've said nothing I think in America, the only bishops that said anything is Bishop Strickland down in Tyler, Texas. And I think in Canada, I don't think any bishop. I looked it up. If somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I did look up to see if any Canadian bishop had said anything. And nobody had said anything other than, and I will give one example. Let me pull it up here on the screen for you. It's a homily given by the Archbishop of Archbishop Edmonton, I think. Yeah, Archbishop of Edmonton, Richard Smith. He gave a homily on January 30th, so just a couple weeks ago. This is the Ottawa, the protest had just started the day before, really. The convoy had been going on for about a week, but they just descended on Ottawa. So he's in Edmonton, and he basically gave a homily, and the reading was about the reading for the day was about Jesus being driven out by the townspeople. And he says, so he writes on here, you might not be able to see it on the screen, but I'm gonna read parts of it. He said, so collectively, the vehicles and the drivers form what we can call a convoy of resistance. He uses this term. He says, account from the Gospel of St. Luke, we that Jesus is carried out by his hometown by a convoy of resistance. See what he's doing here. He's comparing the freedom convoy with the people who drove Jesus out of his hometown. Later he says, the people are enraged and show their resistance by parading him out of town to throw him over a cliff. A convoy of very angry resistance. You see the imagery he's using, that the truckers are basically like these people who are rejecting Jesus. He says, at the heart of the protest, winding its way through the Gospels, is resistance to a mandate, one not of human but divine origin, the command from the Father that we listen to and believe in his Son. So what the bishop here is saying, what Archbishop Smith is saying is, okay, you have here in the Gospel an example of Jesus giving a mandate, or the Father giving a mandate to listen to Jesus, and people are resisting it. And obviously the comparison is to the government today is giving us mandates and people are resisting it. You can tell what side he's on very easily. Then later, he has this paragraph where he talks about one particular aspect of the truckers' reaction to vaccination mandates merits especially careful reflection as we ponder our own response to divine directives. He's trying to make this like this. I'm trying to make spiritual points, but he's really making a political point and just trying to get around it. The protesters are labeling their action a freedom rally. This arises from the understanding of the mandate as an infringement on personal liberty, and in consequence, they're demanding that it be lifted. The question this raises is that of the relation between externally imposed mandates and human freedom. And he goes on to say this, you know, he compares it to divine mandates. Far from inhibiting freedom, obedience to divine mandates is liberty's necessary prerequisite. Now, what's interesting about that is that he clearly wants people to think that if you follow the mandates, the human mandates, it's basically like you're following God's mandates. And if you're resisting it, you're just like those people who kicked Jesus out of town, who tried to throw him over a cliff. You want to kill Jesus if you're in this freedom convoy. That's basically what the bishop is saying, which is obviously ridiculous. And it just, I mean, it's hard to even fathom the baseness of that, how ridiculous of an interpretation of the gospel passage that is, that you would compare the freedom convoy to the people who are kicking Jesus out of town, and you would compare the vaccine mandates with God's mandate to listen to his Son. But that's the state of Catholic bishops today, I guess. Now, what is it actually? What should we really think about this from a Catholic perspective? First, I want to bust out my handy compendium of the social doctrine of the church. Now, note this in your calendars. This might be the only time I ever reference this. Frankly, there's a lot in here that just is not very good. It's poor economics. I mean, there's obviously some things in here that are good, but it's not something I reference too often, but I'm going to reference it today because I think there's a couple things in there that really speak to what we're talking about here. And this is, remember, the bishops will be very much pushing the compendium of the social doctrine. So let's go ahead and look at it and see if they're following it. In paragraph 400 of the compendium, it says, recognizing that natural law is the basis for and places limits on positive law means admitting that it is legitimate to resist authority should it violate in a serious or repeated manner the essential principles of the natural law. And then he quotes St. Thomas on that. And essentially what it's saying is that Catholics do have a right to resist human authority because the positive laws of human authority, i.e. man-made laws, they could contradict the natural law. And if they do violate the natural law in a serious or repeated manner, people have the right to resist. And if that's exactly what the Freedom Convoy is basically saying, they're saying that the principles of the natural law are being violated because we are being denied our ability to support ourselves, our ability to support our families, our ability to eat, to drink, all these things, simply because we won't get a vaccine. An unnecessary vaccine, by the way, because we know, for example, that the vaccine does not stop the spread of COVID. I mean, Canada is like, I think, 90% vaccinated, but they still get cases. Why? Because it doesn't. So it's a personal health decision, not a public policy decision. And so we see we can resist this. We are able to resist this because of the fact that it violates the natural law. I also want to point out paragraph 401, which I think people might be surprised by, but it says the church's social doctrine indicates the criteria for exercising the right to resistance. Armed resistance to oppression by political authority is not legitimate unless all the following conditions are met. So what it's saying is the first paragraph 400 was just saying that you can resist. Obviously, resistance comes in a lot of different ways. You could have, like Gandhi, a peaceful, nonviolent resistance. Or you could have an armed resistance like the American Revolution. So you can have different types of resistance. And the church is saying it is permissible to have armed resistance in some cases. Now, the conditions are, one, there's certain grave and prolonged violation of fundamental rights. Two, all other means of redress have been exhausted. Three, such resistance will not provoke worse disorders. Four, there is well-founded hope of success. And five, is it impossible reasonably to foresee any better solution? Now, I want to be clear about something. I don't think that we meet those criteria right now in our current situation, because I think number two, all other means of redress have been exhausted, definitely has not, I don't think that's occurred yet, because this is the beginning of peaceful protests, beginning of this resistance, really. And so I definitely think that we haven't reached that point, or even close to that point, because of that, because of the fact that number two, all other means of redress have been exhausted. But the fact is, that's what the Freedom Convoy is trying to do. It's trying to do, have this right to resistance, trying to resist now in a peaceful way, so it doesn't have to become an armed resistance later, that it can be done in a peaceful way. I also want to note that there's been, you know, the fact is these truckers, by doing this, they're essentially, in a way, by the blockades and by the and by these protests, by not working, because obviously the truckers are there, they're not working. So they're essentially, in a way, on strike. In paragraph 304 of the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of Church, it states, the church's social doctrine recognizes the legitimacy of striking when it cannot be avoided, or at least when it is necessary to obtain a proportionable benefit, and when every other method for the resolution of disputes has been ineffectual. I think that clearly we've reached that point, because the Canadian government, American, and many state governments here in America and other places have made very clear that our complaining about the mandates isn't going to stop them, isn't going to make them go away. You know, tweeting about it or sharing on social media hasn't stopped them from doing it. Really, it takes much more. And striking, which is essentially what many of these truckers are doing, is a legitimate means in the Catholic social tradition that you can protest something like this. And I think, so I really do think it's clear that the Freedom Convoys fall under Catholic social teaching as a legitimate form of protest. That doesn't mean every protest is legitimate. If you just don't like something, but it's not a violation of natural law, well, you can't go protest. You don't have any right to necessarily protest that, to resist that. It really does make it, it has to rise to the level of being against the natural law. And I think it's very clear. I mean, the church has said that vaccinations, for example, have to be voluntary. Forcing vaccinations in order to live in society, and now going even further and saying if you dare to even complain about that and protest about that, we're going to shut down your bank accounts. I think these are clearly violations of natural law. Now, I will also say, though, just because a resistance, a protest is legitimate, doesn't mean every action in that protest is legitimate. So, for example, you could argue January 6th. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole too much, but you could argue that, for example, the protest being there, all the people who are outside being there, that was legitimate, but perhaps going into the Capitol building was not legitimate. And so that would be a case where you could say certain actions. And so they tried to label this protest, the Freedom Convoy, as this terrible thing. They tried to find people who have Nazi flags or something, or Confederate flags. They tried to get people who are ginning up violence, stuff like that. It hasn't worked. But even if you had somebody go there and commit violence in the name of being opposed to the mandates, that still doesn't mean the overall resistance, the overall protest is illegitimate. It just means that one action would be illegitimate. Again, like I said, armed resistance at this point is not legitimate based upon the guidelines of the Catholic Church. So we have to recognize that these mandates, these restrictions are destroying human lives. They are unbelievably awful for what they're doing to people. We have seen this in the fact that we see depression has increased, deaths of despair has increased, people have lost their livelihoods, small businesses have been shut down, people who maybe spent their whole adult life trying to build up a business, it comes crashing to the ground all because some bureaucrat says it's not safe for you to be in business. When the fact is, now that we're 2 years into this, we found that these lockdowns don't work. There was a Johns Hopkins study that was done, that was released just a couple weeks ago, that showed that lockdowns did not save lives. They might have saved a few lives, but they caused many more deaths by doing them. Mask mandates. I mean, I know people are saying the science has changed to try to backtrack, but the fact is the mask mandates never did anything. I mean, there's chart after chart after chart. I think the guy's name is Ian Miller or something like that on Twitter. He just shows chart after chart after chart that shows that if you look at the incidence of COVID cases, deaths, hospitalizations, whatever metric you want, mask mandates, when they're implemented, do nothing to slow it down. Because you can take two different states that are right next to each other. One has a mask mandate, one does not. And you can basically show that their caseload and everything else, all their numbers, they track very similar. Even when one institutes a mask mandate, it doesn't change that. So the fact is that it's essentially governments are imposing these restrictions on people for no reason. You can't argue this is for the common good. It's clearly not for the common good because it hasn't helped stop COVID. It's done nothing to stop the spread or anything like that. And the vaccines really haven't done a lot either. I mean, they're not stopping the spread at all. Perhaps you could argue that somebody who gets the vaccine might not get as bad of consequences. I don't know if that's true, but even if it is, that's just a personal decision then. It has nothing to do with protecting others, because remember, that's why you're supposed to get the vaccine, according to so many Catholics. It's not because for you as much as it's for other people. Well, it doesn't help other people when you get the vaccine. So we see here a clear violation of natural law. And so therefore resistance is to be commended in this case. And that's what the bishop should be doing. They should be commending it, not being silent about it, or kind of throwing shade at it through your Sunday homily. Now, are the blockades legitimate? I think that's a different question, because obviously just protesting in front of the parliament building is one thing, but actually blocking commerce, blocking roads that might be used, for example, for emergency situations, things like that, is that also legitimate? I would argue yes. And I'm free to understand Catholics who might disagree with this point. But I think honestly, we have a situation where a government has all the power. They have all the ability to do whatever they want. And they've made it clear they're not listening to us. We've been under this for 2 years and they're not going to change. They're not going to shift this. And so I think we do have to start stepping up what the resistance is. Like I said, we're not armed resistance, but we are, I think, in situations like this situation of blockading streets, of blocking bridges so that the commerce doesn't happen. And that's going to be painful for all of us. Some of us might not get the things we want on our end because of that. But I think we have to make those sacrifices, because that's the only thing that they will listen to. I mean, wouldn't you rather streets be blockaded than all of a sudden there be firefights in the Capitol or something like that? I mean, obviously, blockading is still peaceful. Yes, it does block a street. It does keep people from moving to and from. But it's not violent in any way. Nobody's being hurt by this. So I would argue that blockades themselves are legitimate. And by the way, I would also argue that much of what happened at the Black Lives Matter protests were legitimate, in the sense that they believed there was a legitimate grievance against the natural law. And so they went in front of various government buildings, police stations, stuff like that, and they protested. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's what we want people to do. We don't want them to descend to violence. Now, obviously, the problem was is in so many cases, they became mostly peaceful protests where buildings were being burned, small businesses were being attacked, people were being attacked. And obviously, that was never legitimate in that situation. So I would argue that the bishops need to come out in support of the Canadian bishops, obviously, first and foremost, but also the American bishops and bishops in other countries. They need to come out in support of this freedom convoy, show that the Catholic Church is behind it. Now, why is it that they're silent, though? Why have they not said anything? Now, the easy answer is, and I think this is definitely part of the answer, is they're getting a lot of government money. They get a lot of federal funding. And so therefore, this is true in Canada. It's true in America. I'm sure it's true in other countries. So they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them. And I think there is truth in that. I don't think it's that simple, though. I think they get government funding because they're already aligned with what the government is telling them. They're already supportive of the basic narrative. And that's where I think that's why I think they really are silent, is because they blindly accept the narrative. What do I mean by the narrative? I basically am talking about the story being told by our elites, by the government, media, academia, the entertainment industry. What am I forgetting? Oh, big tech. Basically, these organizations have formed what I call the woke axis that basically pushes a narrative, and they make people only know the facts that they're going to give them, and they're only going to say things that push the narrative. So they may be true, they may be false, it doesn't matter. That's all misinformation is, by the way, is when you go against the narrative. It has nothing to do with actually whether or not it's true or false. It's whether or not it goes against the narrative. And I think our bishops have blindly followed the narrative. They believe, for example, that vaccines actually do help others. They believe that that these protesters probably are racist. They probably are misogynist or something stupid like that. They believe that these mandates are necessary in order for public safety. And so I think they just blindly support that. That's why they were in favor of the Black Lives Matter protests, because that went along with the narrative that the whole world is racist, and so we have to do something about it. And so I really do think that they've become like the religious arm of the woke axis. So if the woke axis is government, media, academia, big tech, entertainment, I would say also, unfortunately, many of the Catholic bishops are also part of that axis, because they push the narrative as well in a religious sense. They're like the religious arm of it, because what they will do is they will take the language of the state and they will put it in religious terms. It's like what was happening with that homily from the Bishop of Edmonton, the Archbishop of Edmonton, where he basically was comparing the protesters to those who want to throw Jesus over the cliff. I mean, that's putting in religious language what Justin Trudeau is saying. He's basically just parroting what Trudeau tells him to say, but couching it in a religious aspect, which is basically throwing a guilt trip on Catholics. It's basically saying, well, if you don't support Trudeau, you're really going against Jesus. You want to throw Jesus off a cliff if you don't support what the government is telling you to do. And that's a guilt trip that is, I mean, it's horrific, because you hear a bishop tell you, you have to support this or else you're like people who reject Jesus. Most Catholics are instinctively going to at least give pause and say, yeah, maybe I should support Trudeau and the different governments of the world. What they really need to do, though, what the bishops need to do is they really do need to step away from the state, step away from their incestuous relationship with the state, stand apart from it, be willing to be a St. Thomas Becket. That's what we really need. We need St. Thomas Becket praying for us hard right now, that we would have bishops that would be courageous like he was in resisting the state when the state tried to encroach upon the rights of Catholics, encroach upon the rights of the church. And also, I want to give a word of warning to the bishops. If you support this now, if you support, for example, the government being able to shut down the financial accounts of political protesters simply because they dissent from the party line, why do you think that the state won't one day want to shut down your accounts if you say things like, we're not going to do gay marriages? No, we don't think a man can declare herself a woman. Yes, we think abortion is murder. They're going to declare that hate speech. They probably already have in some places. And you a terrorist organization. Now, I know most of us are maybe thinking, well, a lot of the bishops will just go along with that as well. But I do think there are many bishops who are basically good natured, basically believe the general principles of the Catholic Church. They just go along with the narrative. So they're willing to be hoodwinked into thinking, oh, I'm doing this when I'm by supporting this, I'm really supporting the common good, things like that. But when all of a sudden they tell you that to support the common good, your priests have to marry two men to each other, or they have to marry two women to each other, or else we're going to shut down your financial accounts. What are you going to do then? That's why we really need to support now, early on, things like the Freedom Convoy, so that later when they come after you directly, your excellencies, your eminences, that you will have a leg to stand on. You will have supported, you will keep from getting to that point. So let's pray for the intercession of St. Thomas Becket. I think he's a great saint that we can look to as an example, that our bishop can look to as an example. Let's pray, ask the intercession of St. Becket, Thomas Becket, for our bishops, the Canadian bishops, the American bishops, and all the bishops around the world, that they would stop simply blindly accepting the narrative, that they'd be willing to go against the state when the state violates natural law. God bless these beautiful truckers who have started this, and let's hope they continue it, and we continue to support them. And let's hope and pray that our bishops will support them as well. Okay, everybody, until next time, God love you.